Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Yo, we've got music. Finally, a little bit of production value going on at Locked On Thunder. And we're locking in for episode 16 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review once you're there as well, or you can listen to us on audioboom.com. The first thing I want to talk about today, it's the Thunder offseason. This team has been quiet as possible. It's been quieter than the intro to this podcast right now, I'll tell you that much, because we actually have some amount of production value. They've been silent. They've been completely silent. The offseason's been on mute ever since Kevin Durant left, and I don't think it's just that Sam Presti is too depressed to move. I think it's a strategic silence, though, and trust me, the Thunder didn't forget about free agency. The Thunder, if they were to renounce their free agents, they would open up more than $20 million in cap room, and that is a lot of cap room. Of course, there aren't that many guys to spend on, and I know Thunder fans, they're upset that the Thunder aren't actually spending. But here are my theories. And these are just theories, but here are my theories as to why the Thunder haven't actually signed anyone since Durant left. I have an article about this up on normantranscript.com. Head to my blog, Thunder Road, to find it there. You can go to normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road and find it, or you can just head onto the website, find Thunder Road under the sports tab at the top of the site. Anyway, I've got four theories there. I'll give a couple of what I think are the most likely here and add a little bit of depth to it. First, I'm not 100% sure the Thunder want to commit long-term money. The Thunder paid $14.5 million in luxury tax this year. That was the fourth highest bill in the NBA. The fourth highest for a team that notoriously doesn't like to spend, as many are very quick to point out. But they did spend this year. They spent a lot. It's easy, though, to spend on a championship-caliber team. It's easy to spend when you're chasing a title, and especially when you're yearning to keep Kevin Durant in what's a free agency year for him and coming on a free agency year for Russell Westbrook. You've got to impress those guys. But when you no longer have a championship roster, like the Thunder have this year where they have a good roster, they can make a playoff run, but I don't think anybody's arguing it's a championship roster. And when you no longer have a championship roster, that can fall off. This year, this specifically, there's been a trend of four-year contracts this summer. Everyone's getting 4 years, it seems. You don't have to be an all-star player to get that four-year deal. Last year, the trend was player options. Tons of guys in a year anticipating the cap spike. They wanted one-year deals, and they wanted player options as an option for security after that. So we saw lots of player options. This year, the trend, four-year deals. Guys want to get locked up under what this cap is going to be, even though the cap is expected to rise again next year. But the Thunder are below the salary floor right now. Staying below that doesn't save money. Your $85 million is the salary floor. That's the team's salary. And that's dead money. If teams don't get there, they have to pay out the difference to their players. So staying below doesn't save a thing. But what if the Thunder are worried about giving out four-year deals? What if they're worried about spending for the sake of spending and having to spend beyond this year? I think that's something that could possibly be a concern for both ownership and for Sam Presti if he's not particularly high on the remaining free agents on the market. There's also another possibility, and don't think that these two things have to be mutually exclusive. In reality, it could be a little bit of both. It often is. There's normally not one reason for why things happen or why actions, or in this case, non-actions, take place. Both of these things could be true. So I'll preface the second reason with $20 million in room. Lot of cap room. But the Thunder, they still probably hope they can renegotiate and extend Russell Westbrook. Westbrook's up for an extension right now, and there's some financial incentive for him to do it. Even though a lot of people say that there's not, there actually is. If Westbrook extends for just one season, he can hit free agency in 2018, and that's a big deal. The 2017-18 season, that would be his 10th year, and it would make him a 10-year max player. That's a tier 3 max. Not all max contracts are created equal. Been in the league for under 7 years, you're getting the smallest max. 7 to 9 years, you get a little bit more. 10 plus, that's the biggest max you can get. That's called a tier 3 max. And Westbrook would be eligible for that in 2018. He could extend for 1 year and get the largest max then. Of course, That's subject to adjustment. There's a looming lockout in 2017. Things with the max contract can change. Other things can happen with the basketball-related income. But still, there's incentive for the extension. There really is. His salary would jump almost $9 million for the upcoming season, for 2016-17. That's from a little under $18 million all the way to $26.5 million. It may not happen. Chances are it's not going to happen. Chances are Westbrook's not signing the extension. He may want out of OKC altogether. He may want to become a free agent just to keep his options open. He may want to sign a five-year deal as soon as possible. But the Thunder need to be under the cap to keep the possibility of extending Westbrook open. So $20 million, that's plenty of room. That's a lot more room than you need to extend Westbrook, because the salary would only jump about $9 million, actually a little bit less, closer to 8.7. But if the Thunder are still negotiating with Dion Waiters, let's not forget, Dion Waiters still exists. And if the Thunder are still negotiating with Dion Waiters, Waiters could get in the range of that difference between how far the Thunder are currently under the cap and how much Westbrook's pay bump could be. Waiters could get $10 million, $12 million, maybe more. Alan Crabb just got $75 million over 4 years. I'm not sure Waiters is getting that, but he could certainly get more than 10 or 12, and maybe that's the difference. Bringing back Waiters and hitting more than about $12 million a year, that would take away the possibility of a Westbrook extension. So maybe that's part of what's holding up in the Waiters deal. Maybe that's why he's been on the market for such a long time, among other things, of course. Maybe that's why the Thunder are staying put for now. Now, the Thunder could still use a point guard. They could use a wing. I think so. Ray Felton just went for the minimum, and maybe, you know, maybe he took a little bit less to go play for a top five team in the Clippers, but he still went for the minimum, and there are other point guards out there. You know, Mario Chalmers, Steve Blake, Shane Larkin, Norris Cole. Right now, Cam Payne is the backup, but I think you need some amount of insurance considering Payne's still 21 and was inconsistent last year, as much as the Thunder like Payne and drafted him in the first round a couple of years ago. But if the Thunder are worried about keeping room for Westbrook, it would make sense why they hold off. Hold off on a point guard, hold off on a cheap wing that they could bring in who could guard on the perimeter. And if they're uncertain about spending in the future, or if they're uncertain of their own future, maybe they don't know if they're rebuilding or restructuring because they don't know what's happening with Westbrook. And because of that, they're not sure what pieces they might want in 2017, 2018, 2019. They don't know what the roster is going to look like. But likely because of those reasons, because of uncertainty about spending, because of uncertainty about Waiters, because of uncertainty about Russell Westbrook, because of uncertainty about what the future of the roster is going to look like, that's probably the reason they're not spending right now. Honestly, the telltale sign is going to be when we get a Dion Waiters decision, whether Waiters re-signs with the Thunder, whether he goes elsewhere. Once we know what Waiters is going to do, we might be able to figure out a better idea of what's going to happen with the Thunder. Twitter question time from at OKC Brad Evans. How big of a role will Anthony Morrow have this year? So something that was kind of glossed over, Anthony Morrow's contract is now guaranteed. I'm recording this the evening of July 17th. This will run the morning of the 18th. Anthony Morrow is now a guaranteed player for $3.5 million for the 2016-17 season, last year of his deal with the Thunder. He had a guarantee date of July 15th. If the Thunder had waived him or traded him and somebody else waived him before July 15th, that salary would have come off the books and the Thunder wouldn't have had to pay a dime of it. Now, he's owed $3.5 million. He'll be on the roster for this year, unless, of course, there's some sort of trade made. You know, he kind of fell, Morrow, kind of fell into Billy Donovan's doghouse this past year. That was more for defensive reasons than anything else. He's a tremendous shooter. I mean, I know his percentages were a little bit down this past year, but his ability to get off shots, I mean, I think he might have the quickest release in the entire league. People talk about Curry. People talk about Clay. Has just super quick releases. You know, obviously those guys are insanely accurate and their range is unbelievable and the variety of shots that they can just get off is incredible. But Morrow, strictly in catch and shoot situations, I don't know if there's a guy who releases quicker than him. I did a story on that actually earlier this season, or maybe at the beginning of the offseason, I forget, just about how quickly from the point that he catches the ball, he's able to release it. It's incredible. And I know players around the league kind of marvel over the fact that he's able to release so quickly. And the Thunder need shooting. I mean, they need shooting now more than they did a couple of months ago when people kind of thought Kevin Durant was going to be a part of this roster. This was a team that finished middle of the pack last year in three-point percentage. As, or more importantly, it's a team that finished in the middle of the pack in three-point attempts. Now, Anthony Morrow isn't necessarily going to help a ton with the attempts because he's not a three-point creator. He's just a three-point catch-and-shoot guy. He's not really taking him off the dribble. He's not creating threes for other guys. But he can certainly help with the accuracy. He can certainly help with the spacing. And spacing is something that's going to be an issue. I mean, look, the Thunder are going to be forced to start Ilyasova in all probability if they go forward with this lineup because he would be the only above-average three-point shooter in the starting lineup. That's it. Russell Westbrook, tremendous player, top five, top six player, not an above average three-point shooter for his position. Neither is Victor Oladipo. Andre Robertson has always struggled from three-point range, though he makes up for it in other places. Tanner, if he were to start, is not a three-point shooter. And Adams doesn't go outside the arc. You need some kind of spacing. That's why I think Ilyasova is bound for the starting lineup, regardless of whether you think that he or Kanter is the better player. Ilyasova is just the better offensive fit. Now, I'm not arguing that Morrow was going to start over any of those guys. I don't think he's necessarily good enough to surpass Oladipo or good enough to surpass Robertson. Those guys just bring so many positives that Morrow can't necessarily bring, especially on the defensive end. But at the same time, I could see if this roster stays as is, which I don't know if it will. Sam Presti's shrewd. There could be some moves. There could be moves, beyond Russell Westbrook. There could be moves on the fringes that bring in extra shooters or whatever it is. This is a team that's a little bit devoid of shooting. I could see Morrow getting more minutes. I could see Billy Donovan weighing his defense or his defensive struggles or potential defensive struggles a little bit differently when he needs extra shooting on the wing, when he needs extra guys to kick to for Russell Westbrook. I mean, it's not necessarily just the fact that the Thunder need shots to go in. They need guys to space the floor because Victor Oladipo is a driver. Russell Westbrook is very obviously a driver, and you need guys to open up driving lanes. You need guys to open up the paint for a Steven Adams-Russell Westbrook pick and roll. And if wing defenders are comfortable collapsing in on Steven Adams rolling to the basket, are comfortable helping on Russell Westbrook when he penetrates to the rim, that's going to hurt the Thunder. That's not going to be comfortable for them. And Russell Westbrook, even if he kicks out to those guys, they're not always the best shooters. I mean, look, you want those guys taking those shots. If you get open threes, even with Robertson, you want guys taking those shots if only to force guys to guard you. But that's where the catch-22 comes in, right? So I could see Morrow getting some more playing time this year, especially now the contract is guaranteed. And the Thunder, they're going to be looking for shooting. I don't know if they're going to go out and get any more. It's certainly possible, depending on what happens with Waiters, depending on what happens in the rest of the market. But either way, it's looking like Morrow is going to play somewhat of a role, if only because the Thunder will need some semblance of three-point shooting coming off the bench. From at Lewis Payne, if Westbrook is traded by the Thunder, do you think they can or will build around Steven Adams for the future? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, unless something goes horribly wrong this season, Steven Adams is getting a max contract in 2017. I mean, that's going to happen. Steven Adams is good enough to get a max contract. The Thunder value him enough to get a max contract. That's happening. I mean, for sure. Look at the deals that some of the centers have gotten this offseason who aren't the players Steven Adams is. I mean, Mozgov got $64 million. Jan Mahimi, who I think had a really good year with Indiana, but who I don't think is as good as Steven Adams is, and certainly isn't as young as Steven Adams, he got $64 million. I mean, think about Steven Adams right now, 22-year-old Steven Adams. I don't think he's necessarily as good as DeAndre Jordan right now. There are certain things DeAndre Jordan does better. There are certain things Steven Adams does better. I mean, look, Steven Adams is a better passer. He's already got better ball skills. But if you compare 22-year-old Steven Adams to 22-year-old DeAndre Jordan, DeAndre Jordan, we're talking about the guy who was first team All-NBA center this year. Talk about a really, really good player. If you compare Steven Adams, how he is at 22 compared to DeAndre Jordan at 22, it's not close. Now, maybe that's a little bit unfair because DeAndre Jordan's rapid development since Doc took over in Los Angeles has just been staggering. I mean, DeAndre Jordan's had a little bit of an unconventional... He's had a little bit of an unconventional improvement career arc in that sense. With the way that he kind of struggled under Vinny Del Negro, got benched a lot, didn't play out fourth quarters, I think lost a bunch of his confidence there, and then came back and has really just improved in each individual year of the last three under Doc. And has turned himself into now a first-team All-NBA center and first-team All-Defense center as well, adding discipline on that end when he didn't already have it. Steven Adams, though, is already more disciplined. He's got better ball skills. He's not quite the athlete of DeAndre, but the Thunder, I think, use him in a similar way. They switch him out on defenders on the perimeter. They use his athleticism as a defender, as an anchor. You know, he's playing a versatile defensive role for them, especially in the postseason. And that's a big deal for Adams. Offensively, I think they're going to use him more in short roll situations. I don't think that his threat now is just going to be catching the ball down low off pick and rolls and finishing from there, or finishing lobs, which is basically all DeAndre does in the pick and roll. Now, DeAndre has tons of value because guys are so afraid of him throwing down lobs. A defense is collapsing all over him. He gets wide open shots for J.J. Redick or whoever is playing the three for the Clippers or whatever it is. You know, that's what makes that such a devastating pick and roll with Chris Paul. Now, with Steven Adams, I think he's going to be a little bit more versatile than DeAndre. He won't quite have the athleticism of DeAndre. I don't think anybody in the league has the threat of throwing down the lob like DeAndre, including his teammate Blake Griffin. But Steven Adams, I think, is going to get the ball in short rolls a little bit more this season. I think his ball skills have rapidly improved. I think his passing within the offense has been better. I think there have been times where off of those basket cuts and those basket rolls, I think we've seen times where Steven Adams has found shooters in the corner, or he's found guys who are open for shots, and that's a big deal. If you've got a center who can create like that off the pick and roll, who can also finish at the rim, that's really tough, and he makes his free throws. Steven Adams is certainly a guy the Thunder plan on building around, especially on the defensive end. Now, I don't know if he's a first option offensively. I think he needs a point guard, just like most modern-day centers do. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's true for pretty much every big man there is. Big man's not going to bring the ball up. Point guard's got to give him the ball. But I think the Thunder are comfortable with what Steven Adams is going to develop into. I think they should be. I think he's a very good player. And I think, you know, he can improve even more. I don't think he's at his ceiling right now. And he's probably got a couple more years before he comes into it. Before we head out, remember, you can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have any questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Bring in the music. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk. It won't be a solo podcast tomorrow. Have a few good guests coming on for the week. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.